Success is when people are being quoted, have something they learned at TAPI. I can't tell you how many emails since we left there. And some guys have great ideas about the future, things we should consider doing. We take all that in.
Hi, I'm Christine Shaw, CEO and President of Naylor Association Solutions, and I'm your host of the Association Advisor Podcast. We'll learn from successful association executives, partners, and clients on how to grow membership engagement and non-dues revenue to create a thriving, prosperous, and value-driven association. I invite you to join me in keeping informed and, most importantly, keeping your association profitable. Our goal is to leave you feeling inspired, more confident, and more knowledgeable. I'm Christine Shaw, and this is the Association Advisor Podcast. Hi, and welcome back to the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. I'm your host, Christine Shaw. In today's episode, we'll be discussing events, publications, engaging young professionals with a focus on non-dues revenue, and so much more. Joining me today is Larry Montague, President and CEO of TAPI. We will talk with Larry about how TAPI leads the pulp and paper industry through technical education and training, and how the association has been able to drive innovation and set impactful standards. Plus, he shares how his passion for the industry and association has only grown with time, and what it's like to lead an association with more than 100 years of experience. I'm really excited to learn more, so let's get started. Welcome, Larry. I'm so delighted to have you as a guest today on the Association Advisor Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm honored to be here, and we wouldn't be here without our board of directors, our team at TAPI, and our volunteers, as well as our great partners like you guys.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that. I'm really excited about this episode just because of the amount of experience that TAPI brings to the association world and to the industry specifically. So let's start with you, Larry. You've spent a number of years in sales and marketing in specifically the pulp and paper industry before taking the helm at TAPI. Tell us a little bit about your journey and key moments throughout your career that led you to where you are today.
Basically, the genesis of my journey, as you called it, is I was looking out of school and looking for a job and ad in the commercial appeal in Memphis, Tennessee, where I grew up. We didn't have anything to go to, this, that, and the other back in those days. But I answered that, and I was one of the guys called. They took 30 folks that were freshly out of school and flew us up to International Falls from all over the country. And we had several things to deal with. We were put up there and couldn't breathe. It was so cold, coldest spot in the nation most of the time. And a Southern guy about died up there. But went up there and they ran us through everything, their timber and wood product side, their corrugated side, their pulp and paper mills. And finally, after about 2 or 3 weeks being up there, they assigned us to a certain division. And at that time, I was on their timber and wood products division. So okay. I did that. And then they transferred me out of that after 2.5 years to their corrugated packaging division. So there was the connection right there, as well as several other things I had to do for them. And I was in sales and marketing. And during my career, I spent time as general manager. I spent time as a merger and acquisition point person for our companies and also recycled fibers division. I was general manager over that. We know a lot about this industry and so happy that I learned them at a younger age where I can apply them now.
That's amazing. I have a little connection because my son, actually, he graduated from WPI as a chemical engineer and went straight to work at Valmet, which is in the paper and pulper. He did 5 years there and really liked it and learned a lot. He visited a lot of the plants and manufacturing, and it was eye-opening, all the things that you focus on in that industry. So tell me a little bit more about any specific achievements with your time at TAPI thus far that you believe captures the essence of the association's mission.
Well, I'll back up just a little bit. When I got hit by a retained recruiter for this position, reached out, and basically I told him I wasn't interested. I was in the corporate office of another company at the time. I told him I'd try to find somebody that could possibly help, but I wasn't the guy. And this went on for 6 months. And then other day, I looked up my offer letter to me that was back in 2006. And Willis Potts was the chairman of the board. And in that letter, he said, we interviewed 200 people.
Wow.
Yeah, scared me to death. And he said, and you're the one, it's unanimous, they want you. And then I had to go tell my other company that I was leaving. They didn't like that very much. But anyway, one of the good things about it is when they made the offer, they told me that they welcomed my wife to travel with me. Her name is Suzanne.
I love that.
They wanted her to you know, get to know the members, get to know the member spouses and things of that nature. And so she helps me a lot. She's my greatest asset.
Oh my gosh, I love it. It says a lot about TAPI too, that they wanted to bring your spouse along. I think that's really smart for an association or a company, quite frankly, to do that, right?
Yeah. I love these guys. They're men and women. They're just fantastic. But what I inherited, to be honest with you, the sad side of it is TAPI had lost $24 million in an 11-year period.
Wow.
For a nonprofit, that's pretty devastating. Yeah. They decided to shut it down or find a new team that could come in. And they were just going to give the monies left in the foundation to the universities that had ties with the paper industry. And lo and behold, I'm here. And we're 17 years in the black now. And we're working on our 18th year. Our fiscal year ends August the 31st. So we've got a great team. I can't say enough about the team we have.
Well, I think that sentence right there captures the essence of the mission. I mean, the fact that you took the company after it lost $24 million over that period, and now you're successfully and consecutively in the black since you've taken the helm is quite an accomplishment. So kudos to you. And it's a great move for the association because it's needed, right? So, and TAPI was formed in 1915 as a forum for scientific and technical information. So it could be channeled, exchange ideas, et cetera. So if you think about where you're at today, does that remain a foundational principle? And what is at the core of TAPI today versus 1950?
1915, actually 1914, the industry was owned by just a few families up in the Northeast. And they were just having a big time shipping in their own backyard. And what happened was they started shipping outside their own backyard. People started moving west, you know, to the Midwest. Every time they'd ship something, a customer would order the same thing, but they were nothing alike. 1914, the owners got together and said, man, we've got a mess here. We've got to figure out how to do this. We've got to have some standards in the industry. And that's how it started. They got together. Antitrust is solid with us. It's very strong. We don't play those games. But they started exchanging what machinery they were using, what furnace coming in the mill were they using, and how did it play out best, and what were their success stories. And they literally got together and formed the, basically the standards. That's what we started out, international standards. They share all kind of anything but pricing or cost. They don't get into that, but they share things out of their labs, a better way to do something, faster equipment, faster run times, things of that nature. And so that's where it all started. So TAPI, since that time, a couple of things we've added. We started listening to our members again. We kind of fell off the wagon by not listening to members. We added some different membership levels, young professionals. We didn't have that before. We did have student members. And also women in industry, which we call WIN.
Yep.
That was a big deal, big deal. Right now we have 10 divisions, the women in industry, and we also started a DEI committee. We started a safety orientation for the industry by the industry, which is called TAPI Safe. It basically was to bring people home from work safe and sound. And then we started the AMS, Association Management Systems Division. That helped us to get smaller associations, help them come back where they were struggling. So those are some things we did different. Our collaboration has been a lot more than it was years ago, as far as that goes.
Yeah, and that's a really important point, Larry, because if you're a director of any association, those pieces of advice right there, it's one, listening to your members, not assuming. You know, we talked about this in a different conversation with another association director, but being able to understand what the members need and want is so important. I love also that you identified some areas where you need to tap into, pardon the pun, to really pull new membership along. Younger generation is key. Sounds like you're effectively doing it. Women in industry, that's become a big initiative all over. There's more women today in the workforce. So, you know, giving them a forum and leaning in is really helpful. So I think that's great advice and kudos to you for recognizing that and making those changes. Tell us a little bit what it's like to lead an organization with that kind of longevity and clarity of purpose relative, for example, to your corporate career.
Well, we have more member engagement. And one of the things I did, because we stopped listening to members, was we put the membership at the top of the org chart. If they can see it, everybody else can see it, right under the board of directors. They have more input and we need to listen to them more because they're the people spending their time, actually volunteering their time to help TAPI grow and help the industry grow. They get a lot of kudos. They get so many awards and recognitions for them for the time they spend with TAPI. And when they come up with something, they get really acknowledged that they share, like authoring books, things of that nature. So it's a lot more collaboration than it had been the prior 15 years, on our part anyway. I want to go back to that antitrust. These guys feel safe under it. Not only do we send it out prior to them coming, but we send it out It's on the screen every time we meet. And it's not just one time, it's every time a session changes, because we can't live with that hanging over our heads. So we've had members, honestly, that stand up and stop a speaker if they act like they're getting, you know, crossing that bar. So I'm so proud of our folks. And we train that,
yeah,
you know, to the committee chairs. Well, one of the things that I'm so thrilled about working with TAPI is, you know, the standards, as I mentioned, that come into play, as I mentioned earlier. And you can look at it on your own front porch when you get a box, corrugated box shipped from Amazon or anywhere else. You turn it over and it's either, most of the time it's round or it could be rectangular, but that's a BMC, a box maker certificate. I get so excited tearing down my boxes. Edge crush test is a TAPI standard. It used to be bursting strength, but you know, they started shipping boxes on pallets and everything now, so that's not such the big thing now with edge crust, the stacking strength of the boards. And that all came out of TAPI committees and our standards.
I'm going to have a different mind when I open my Amazon packages, because I'm probably the biggest consumer of my Amazon packages, so I'm going to start looking for that.
I wanted to rent a small baler, you know, for our front porch, but yeah, they wouldn't let me do that.
I'm sure. Well, actually, let's talk about some of your member engagement tools and solutions. One of them is publications and technical reports. So they're a cornerstone of the education of TAPI. Let's talk specifically about TAPI Journal and Paper 360. And the specialized content and how that helps communicate and advance the industry overall.
You know, we have a lot of engineers in our group and our association, and they love to delve down in things so much. So we've got all these committee systems going right now. They can be on anything you can name in the paper industry or packaging industry, and they can sign up for those committees as a TAPI member. And again, antitrust is it. That's our umbrella. But they could come in there and they get to be listened to, and they love to be restated, quite frankly, in a book, TAPI Journal. They're authors of books and things of that nature, and also be interviewed for Paper 360 magazine. You know, everybody kind of likes that. Yeah. It's just kind of a human nature. And so I think Jan Bottoleri, our senior editor, does a great job with that. And we've got so many members, as I mentioned, like the TAPI Journal editors and editor board. And just about anything you see come out of the pubs and presses, that usually comes from a committee of volunteers that just love the industry and want to give back.
Yeah, I love that. That's fantastic. It's such a great tool and communication piece. Sometimes I don't think people recognize how important that is for any association, but it sounds like you're doing a good job too with how you produce it and the information you go out. Another great opportunity to do that is through events. So I know they're a major part of TAPI. I didn't even realize that you host 30 additional conferences in addition to TAPICon, your annual conference. And I understand you just got home from a record-setting TAPICon. So tell us about that.
Oh, it was a blast. You talk about getting energized. You go to one of those and you get people that we budgeted first off for 1,200 people, and we had 1,499, missed 1,500.
Congratulations.
I started to go get a guy off the street and pay his registration, but they wouldn't let me do that. I'm just kidding. Yeah, it was fascinating to see that kind of group come together. We always have something fun for them. You know, it's not just all, you know, working all the time, a lot of receptions. We rented out the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame across the street from the hotel, and they got to spend 3 or 4 hours there, dinner over there. And we've got some garage band members. I mean, they got to go down there and play instruments and sing, and they love that part of it. And I got to tell you, another thing is bringing the spouses on board. It ties everything in together. We have a fun run to raise money. You can walk or run a 5K, but it's raise money for scholarships. And the one they had there has raised literally since they've been doing it over $200,000 worth of scholarships. And so I get to go out there and be with them and walk fast and all that kind of fun stuff. And my wife does as well. So people that come back, they're talking about friendships they've made, mm-hmm. and they vacation together way away from TAPI. But just that's the kind of camaraderie we have that we built. That's the strength of TAPI.
And in terms of like success, besides the numbers, what else would you say, especially now post-COVID, events are back stronger than ever. How would you define success in today's event model?
Success is when people are being quoted, have something they learned at TAPI. I can't tell you how many emails since we left there. And some guys have great ideas about the future, that things we should consider doing. We take all that in and put it with our senior strategy team and try to figure out how best to do that. And if we can't do it fiscally responsibly, we tell them why we can't. But bottom line, it's not always been dollars and cents, but we got to a point where we have to be very level-headed with the committee chairs. Some things we just can't afford to do. Bottom line, it costs too much. So when we come away with people glad they were there and talking very, you know, nice about it, if you will, and things they learned and can quote other people, and then it's not so bad to have the little net ordinary income that goes with it instead of just red ink all the time.
Absolutely. You picked up on something too, because a lot of association events do have a spouse program. And that's a piece of advice I give, because bringing that along, I just went to an association event where they had a spouse rate and I brought my significant other along, and it was fantastic, you know, because it becomes part of the networking and the camaraderie as well. So I think that's great that you do that. And I think more associations should get that practice. Now, let's talk a little bit about your membership growth. So you're seeing tremendous growth in your international membership and really becoming a true global organization. So what challenges does working on behalf of international membership create versus just local, and how do you solve for those?
Well, I'm going to tell you the funny part of it. 6,500 people have my cell phone number. And the time zones are crazy as well. And just being able to understand each other a lot of times is crazy. But I've been fortunate to go literally all over the world since I've been with TAPI. I've got to go to a dinner with the King and Queen of Sweden when they were having a special deal over there. And then Canadian consulate that happened to be in Sweden, one of the guys, our members, had won something from them as well. And we got to go with the Canadian consulate, and that was a lot of fun. I've been to China a couple of times. We have a sister association. It's called China TAPI. We have sister associations all over the place, even in South Korea, to get to go to some of those countries and kind of see what they're doing. And they're always very welcoming and always glad to see us, which is kind of cool. And on our 100-year anniversary in 1915 in downtown Atlanta, we had from every state, and then I think there were 17 or 18 countries that showed up with presents to present us.
Oh, wow. And
it's just unbelievable. So the international market is really good. We try to include them where we can. And then if we can't at the time, we'll do virtual summits and things of this nature with them, especially because of COVID. But now that bar is going down.
Yeah, well, I guess that is one good way to solve for those, is the virtual environment. In fact, I came from a global background as well. And even pre-COVID, utilizing tools like at that time, Global Hangout and Meet were essential, because it's a way to stay connected if you can't get on a plane, always. Absolutely. Bridge the gap. So that's great. Now, what a lot of people don't realize is the publications, events, and other communication tools provide non-dues revenue, which is very critical for associations, especially when you described your association was in the red, now it's in the black. So what strategies do you use to build and maintain long-term relationships with the sponsors and advertisers who support that and create that mutual benefit and value?
I'll touch on that in just a second, but since you asked the question, just to give you an idea, right now, membership is 13% of our revenues. This fiscal year, only because we don't have as many events this year because of COVID, we had to bounce things around. Right now, I said 13% on membership, 11% on events this fiscal year, year to date. Usually it's a lot more than that, you know, be honest with you. But right now, pubs and presses are 23%. Training is 9%. At TAPI Safe that I mentioned is also a training, but it's totally separate than that. 40% of our revenues through TAPI Safe. That's something we did for the industry. They asked us to do it, and we did it. And they trust the name of TAPI. And then the association management services, that's about 2% of revenues. So we had to be quick on our feet, bottom line, to come up with other things. And by the grace of God, we were able to. You know, and our sponsors, we talked about trying to get to know them better, and what can we do? You know, we couldn't live without them. We have to have them. And I know how much they spend on the events and things like that, the sponsorships and everything else, advertising. It's very expensive. But at the same time, they get value out of it. They tell me about it. And I talked to one guy, an event 2 weeks ago out in California, and he did My Time at TAPI. It's a video. And he claimed that he was a sales guy. He's gotten over $3 million worth of new business from being at TAPI. That blew me away. I want to put him as the poster child.
Yeah.
But we've gotten to know these people better. And when we sit down with them and plan, we try to come up with some customization that's just for them at these events or any other thing they might want to sponsor. And it's kind of fun. And I think bottom line is communication is the key. In certain circumstances, if they feel like things didn't go well, I'll make a trip out there and do a Travels with Larry. Write up an article about
it. Oh, I like that.
And then over the wire that comes out every week, it's maybe there or not, but that's where it ends up. It depends on who's asking me what to do and how much time it takes. But that's a little extra that we do for them.
Yeah, and I'm really grateful you shared that. And thank you for your willingness to do that, because so many association directors, I don't think, realize how much revenue you can generate from non-member related items. And, you know, you described yourself at the beginning of this episode that you picked up the leadership role of an association that was bleeding money and potentially being shut down. Yeah. And so now to have these multiple sources of revenue coming in, it's not even about the revenue. It's what you're able to do for the association. You've described so much about the learning, the standards, the benefit, the mutual benefit. The gentleman you just shared who generated $3 million of business off of a sponsorship. So that's the good stuff, right? It helps everybody enhance their business and enhance the industry. So that's fantastic. Thank you for sharing.
Sure thing.
And then in terms of setting technical standards and methods for safety and sustainability, how are you engaging with the next generation of association industry leaders to continue to drive innovation? I know you talked at the beginning that you have an effort to bring them into the membership, but how do you get them involved in this?
Well, first off, we have local sections across the country, because back when TAPI started, everybody went to New York City for the meetings or annual meetings, and it got expensive. And then I don't know exactly when they started, but they were here when I got here. We have 23 student chapters from the universities, the majority of them in the United States. We do have one in France, and I've got where the other one is. It's outside the United States. But this has been going on for a long time. It's called Student Summit, and it takes place at a different location every year, but at the same time over Martin Luther King holiday weekend, because the kids are out of school that Monday, and the professors are letting them travel. They all have a representative from their university. Kids just love it. They love it. They come to it. And the people are standing in line to interview them. Every big manufacturer there, they get in multiple offers before they leave. Now, these are offers of co-ops and internships. And if you're graduating in May, full-time employment. You talk about getting the kids involved quickly, and their professors tell them, we want you to go to these TAPI events. We want to get you involved. And what was so much pleasure for me this year at TAPICon, seeing some of those kids that I used to interact with. They have an engineering competition too, which gets me jazzed up for the rest of the year. And I see them now at TAPICon taking roles, getting up a committee leader or getting up on stage to help out and do whatever they need to do. So that part is bringing me a smile on my face to see these guys being plugged in.
You know, as you're talking about these events, it's funny, for all I know, my son probably got his job that way because he came out of WPI as an engineer and went to one of those events, but I didn't make the connection until just now. So that's pretty cool. Now, I know you have a saying that there are two types of people in the industry, TAPI members and those who should be, which means you're very passionate about what you do. What excites you about the future of the pulp and paper industry?
Well, I'm glad you quoted that. I appreciate it. I made it up on the go one day. Everybody grabbed a hold of it. Bottom line, the future itself, because to me, we're working with everybody to ensure folks are getting engaged in what this industry is all about, and more importantly, what it can be. And these folks are swapping ideas. A lot of smart people come to these. And you're literally watching it happen while you're there. They had a robot, Spot, this dog, flew me away. It was going all over the convention floor, if you will. He actually got an award there. And then he and I had been, not the dog, but the guy that makes it and runs it. But he showed me videos of going into mills where you don't want an individual to go in, the tight spaces, confined spaces, so forth and so on. So that just gets me excited about all the new automation and innovation that's happening. And I tell you the other thing that we've done a poor job at in our industry, we don't talk about how green we are. We're the greenest industry in the world. Absolutely. We recycle our product way more than aluminum gets recycled. When we harvest trees, we can use that fiber up to 7 times before you have to offer any more virgin material in there. And for every tree we harvest, we plant 1 to 4. So
I'm so glad you said that, because I learned that myself, because I've always been in media. So printing and, you know, is a big part of what we do. And obviously with sustainability and all that being a challenge in climate control, people didn't realize, like, we did a lot of education on the recyclability of what all the goods that are used into it. And I think at one point they did a thing where they showed like just how many products came from one single tree. And it's fascinating. So you're right. It's a very green and sustainable industry. So thanks for sharing that. As we close out the interview, are there any recommendations you have for our listeners in terms of books and reading so they can continue to learn after the episode?
I'll tell you exactly when you said that. When I saw that, I go, man, I know right one I'm going to. First off, the Bible.
Okay, great. Yes.
Second to that is Courage to Execute. He was one of our speakers at one of these events. And James D. Murphy, Courage to Execute. And bottom line, it's the elite of the U.S. military. He was an Air Force F-15 pilot. And he and some other guys got together and started this company. He's a founder of Afterburn Incorporated. It's a bunch of guys that flew jets over there, and they got together. And some of these guys, special ops, got together. And bottom line, he fascinated our entire audience. And I immediately bought the book. And we use this at our senior strategy team level at TAPI to plan And the biggest thing that I got out of it was prioritize and execute. So many times managers get together, they got so many things coming at them in a quick time, they have to make decisions and they don't always prioritize. And this has helped Tappy. I mean, we got the great senior strategy team, great key members at our offices, and great board of directors. And so this makes us pause and stop with the world falling around you to prioritize and then execute.
Well, that's an exciting read, and I wrote it down myself. So just to repeat, Courage to Execute by James D. Murphy.
That's it.
Awesome. I'm going to get that myself. You've given me something to do and to learn from, so I appreciate that. That's what this is all about. And how can our listeners connect with you?
Just like 75 countries do. My cell phone and my email address. It's lmontague, M-O-N-T-A-G-U-E, at tappy.org. That's T-A-P-P-I.org. That's usually the easiest way because I'm traveling all the time.
Absolutely. Well, we will hopefully take you up on that. And I know I might reach out and get some more tips. This is a great session. I personally learned a lot, and I know our listeners are going to learn a lot from this conversation. And it was really interesting to hear about your journey into association leadership coming from where you came from and the turnaround you did with Tappy. So well done. And I'm excited to continue to watch what you do in the future for Tappy. So thanks for spending the time with us today, Larry. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it. And to your whole team, thank you very much for pulling it off.
Thank you for listening to the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. If you'd like to access more resources to serve your association needs or join our newsletter, you can visit our website at naylor.com or just click the links in the show notes of this episode. Please be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast listening app, like Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcast, so you won't miss an episode. Also, I'd love to hear from my listeners directly. Feel free to email me at christine.shaw@naylor.com. Until next time, we at Naylor are wishing your association success.